Well, g'day again. It's the two ordinary coppers.
Very ordinary.
And we're back again. And look, I think what we've rolled on from the series, you know, we were going through you know, the early days of policing right through. And in the last podcast, we discussed our roles where we moved into the specialised roles, the investigative side of things. We spoke about the tactical teams and how we went in there and explained what that is, that property crime, how it's just that next level up from your general duty sort of thing.
Yep.
And then talked about how both of us were involved in a murder investigation really early on in 2010 that really showed us that we didn't know what we were doing in the investigative, in that detective level role. You'd never claim detective designation unless you have it.
No, that's right,
exactly. We were plainclothes constables. That was thumped into us really early on. It's, oh, the detective's involved, and we cut off as of what detectives? Where's your designation?
Yep.
You're not a detective. Don't say you are until you are one. So that was an important thing early on. But and that sort of segues nicely into what we want to talk about today, which is leadership.
Yep.
So leadership is obviously in all walks of life, but within policing especially, and it's the military environment and that sort of thing, where you're dealing with stuff that people are really struggling with. And there's no takeaway from any other role, but what I found in policing was that a crew who has a good leader can go to really bad things, do a lot of work. They work better for a good leader, and you can get really good crews and put them under a bad leader, and you'll have a crew that are booking off sick, that are just not interested in being at work, that their work diminishes, they make excuses for their work because they just don't want to work for that person.
Yeah.
And I think there's that there's a saying that is in society that people don't leave jobs, people leave managers.
Yeah.
So I think what we can do, and we sort of want to keep a bit of continuum to this, but I think it was, we can talk about how we were led early, and yep, led well, and what with some poor things. I don't really remember bad leadership when I was junior.
Not so much. I just trying to think back in the early days. I mean, we were fortunate in the way, I think I've mentioned this before, we had good senior partners.
Mm.
We had some really good sergeants as well. And you discussed about how people pulled you in after, you know, quite disturbing incidences. Yep. And just, I don't know, I can't actually think of any bad leaders back in that time. I mean, you always had your couple of rogue cops, or not so much rogue cops, but cops that, you know, didn't really fit the role. But in our leadership, like,
there's a technical word for them. They're called assholes. Yeah, definitely. So I think I can talk about what I saw as good leadership from the junior point of view. So I witnessed good leadership from other people.
Yep.
And we've sort of gone over that already, like explaining the whole going to a bad job. Don't get me wrong, a good leader also gets the job done.
Yep.
So that you need to achieve the role. They'll utilize the people under their command to achieve the outcome, and that has to occur. But it needs to be done in such a way that the people doing the job on the ground feel supported, feel backed up, feel led, feel that they're respected, and they're important in their role, and that will make them do their job to the best of their ability.
Well, I'll just butt in there. I think what we really need to narrow down is communication, because it's communication that's key, really. Mm. When you've got to be able to communicate to your junior officers, as well as the junior officers also need to feel safe to communicate to their bosses.
It's got to be that open door. So we spoke about earlier where good leaders would, after a bad situation, say, bring it in and have a chat about things. And that was looking after the mental health. But good leaders also let you do your job. So there's a term that's in society and it's very well known, and it's my biggest pet hate in the whole world, and that's micromanagement.
Yeah.
I saw early on good sergeants who would stand back, stay away. They're not... What they did was they didn't abdicate the role. They delegated the role.
Yep.
The role of a sergeant, for us as junior members, was to give us the tools we needed and the opportunity for us to do our job. It wasn't for them to do our job and the next person's job and to tell us how to use our biro and how to drive a car. We have skills. Their job was to direct us towards where we needed to apply our skills,
yep,
and let us do our job, provide guidance, because they're experienced operators as well.
Yep.
So provide guidance in what they require. And then to be that caveat, well, not the caveat, it's the wrong word, but be that conduit, sorry, to the prosecution and that sort of thing, where they are the ones who maintain the quality.
Yep.
So they are accountable for the product that comes from their group. So talking about a patrol group, which is the lowest level of general duties policing, where you've got a couple of vans on the road with a senior partner in the car and a person next to you. And I might just add there, leadership comes from your senior partner too.
Oh, definitely.
But that leadership was more providing a good example.
Yep.
Just doing the work. They're a worker, but they show you how to do the work. And that's that level of leadership.
Yeah.
I think what we're talking about more is the higher level of leadership. So we're still talking operational. So we're not getting into the executive level or even the middle management yet.
Yep.
We're talking about that operational command, that operational leadership, that you're at work at 3 o'clock in the morning and this person's there with you, but they're your boss. They're just above you. So it's a complex role and it's something that has to be done well. And that person, in order to achieve a good outcome, has to be a people person.
Exactly. And I think you kind of brushed over something just there, and you've spoken about this earlier. It's about not being in the trenches with your workers, but you're standing up there guiding. And it's very important to make sure you distinguish yourself from your role to their role.
Yeah.
Because the problem is, one thing I found when I moved up into a more leadership role, I was trying to do too much.
Yeah.
And I wasn't micromanaging, but I was trying to do too much of the workload. I needed to delegate and actually, like you said, give them the resources that they need to actually do this.
Yeah. So I can tell you an example of bad leadership that I experienced early on was... And it wasn't terrible, but it was still, it was exactly what you're saying. The leader was trying to do too much.
Yeah.
But what they were doing inadvertently was, you've got to remember, we're a ranked organisation, and we had instilled in us, especially our generation, that we respect rank. So we had our sergeant, or I think it was an acting sergeant, who was, like you said, trying to do too much, getting involved in us. And what they were doing inadvertently was making us stop. So we wouldn't do our job, we'd watch them do the job.
Yeah.
But as a result, that sergeant or that acting sergeant all of a sudden has got the weight of the world on their shoulders, because they're trying to do everything and they think, wow, being a sergeant's a really hard job, you've got to do all this work.
Yeah.
Whereas like, well, yeah, it's yes, the weight of the world's there, but you've got to let the tools do the work, not your hand.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not belittling people to pull on those tools, but we are. The coppers on the ground are the ones who do the job. And the sergeant makes sure the job gets done.
Exactly.
So I'll flip forward to when I was actually a shift supervisor, and I'll give an example of me being early on and not trying to tell the guys how to do their thing, but I got involved in a job where I thought I was going to help out. And look, the help was appreciated. What happened was it was a job that of a slight level of complexity where that more than one statement was required. There was about 4 or 5 witnesses who needed to be sort of locked down straight away and statements taken. So I, being the keen young budding sergeant, have gone, no worries boys, I'll take a statement for you. So there wasn't a lot going on. It was just one of those days. It's an evening shift in Darwin, so it could potentially be busy, but it wasn't at the time. So I decided I'd go into a statement. Now, as you know, taking a statement, and just for people who don't know it, you're locked in a one-on-one conversation with somebody that you can't really interrupt, because you're extracting information from a witness and you really need to concentrate on them and allow them to tell their story with minimal interruption in order to get the best evidence.
Yep.
So I can't be distracted from that. It's important that that statement's done well. If you're going to get a statement, you get a good statement. The trouble is, I have to still be aware of my worldly surroundings. I'm locked in a statement-taking room, which is... For those who haven't been in the police station, it's a very small room with absolutely nothing on the wall.
Yep.
There's a desk in the middle with a computer and nothing else, and maybe a box of tissues, and that's it. And maybe a bin in the corner, and there's nothing else in that room. But I have my radio on really low, so I can still hear what's going on. And the trouble is, very soon after I get into the crux of my statement, a supervisor was required. They need help. One of the other crews needs some kinds of guidance at an actual job.
Yep.
And I can't go. I can't just cut and break. I say, yeah, I acknowledge that. It wasn't a recorded statement. It was a type statement.
Yeah.
So I could still talk on the radio. I've told, I'm just taking a statement. I'll be out there. And as a result, another supervisor from a different sector, because Darwin's a little unique in that there are 3 sectors instead of one. So Alice Springs, there's one sergeant, one watchman.
Yeah.
Catherine's the same. Tenebrae's the same. Darwin has 3 police stations operating in the greater command area. So you can actually have another sergeant come to another sector and actually help out. And that occurred, but that took that sergeant away from his role in his sector. So I learned straight away, and to his credit, that sergeant, who's a friend of mine, said, mate, you got stuck in the trenches. He said, my guys are busy too, and I had to come and sort your guys out because you got stuck in the trenches.
Yeah.
He goes, I know what you're doing. I know you were trying to help the troops. So it wasn't critical. It wasn't like I was unavailable.
No.
Or just I was off at home doing whatever. I wasn't there.
Mm.
I was too involved in one of the crews, and as a result, I neglected my other crew.
Yeah.
Crews. I had three crews. So I learned then, right, that's not your role. And I never really got that badly as a junior member. I didn't see that too badly.
Mm.
But I remember as a senior member, you're acutely aware of that. And you need to be aware of that because you do see it often from the middle management.
Yep.
So when you are a leader of other people, you are still being led. You still have bosses to report to, you know. And I remember on a couple of occasions being told, come on, mate, you need to get down there. And it was funny that they used the term, in the trenches with the troops. And I said, no, I don't need to be in the trenches with the troops. I need to be hanging back above the trenches, looking across and going, right, that crew's doing that. They're under control. This crew's doing that. They're tied up in that. I think they need a dog handler. We're going to go and try and find an offender now. And I think a dog would be good, like a police dog would be good to track that person down or whatever else. So my job then was to arrange for that extra resource to go and help my guys.
Mm.
That's my job.
Yeah.
Do we need more resources? Do I need to get another crew to go and help these guys out?
Yeah.
So do these people need more tools?
Yeah.
That's the role. How do they achieve the role that I need them to achieve? And if you can take that backward step, your team will work really well together. The other thing is the team really want to do their job. They want it. They're well trained. They know what they're doing. They want to do their job. If you get in there and muddle with it, it is a human nature to step back.
Yeah.
And, oh, the sergeant's here, they're going to do it. And that's not good.
No, that's exactly right. And what I actually want to, you started to go into it there. It's about they need to take ownership of what they're doing as well. And you are there as the experience to make sure they do that well.
Mm.
So what they do is they report to you and you sit there, this is good. Yeah, this is good. You've done this well. Yeah, this could be done better. But if they don't actually take ownership of that, then they... You know, if you try and give them feedback where you've tried to intervene, it doesn't mean the same. It doesn't have the same effect.
No. It's just so important that you let talented people do their job.
Yes.
And I think that was the big thing. That exists in general duties. General duties are a little funny because you're going to have really junior members and you're going to have to watch them.
Yeah.
You do have to rely on your senior partner. You don't want to be overbearing on them. And this is where the balance comes in because you can't abdicate that role. I like there's two terms that they mean similar things, but they're different. There's abdication, which is just, it's yours, do it. I don't want to look at it again.
Yeah.
And there's delegation. And to me, the delegation is that the role is yours and these are your guidelines. You will achieve that role and however I want you to do it that way.
Yeah.
You must achieve this. This is your left and right of arc, which is the military term, which is basically, it's a machine gun analogy, which is you can shoot targets from this point to this point. So that's your left and right and of arc. So it's a really good thing. It's you can go and do that job, and quite a lot of the time, those left and right of arcs are already there. Standard operating procedures, general orders. So you go and operate as a police officer lawfully. You know how to do that.
Yeah.
You go and do it. I'm not going to interrupt you. I expect a certain standard back from you. And as long as that's, like you said earlier, well communicated out, well communicated back, the lines of communication are open both ways.
Yeah,
the troops will love it because they're out there doing their thing. They're being trusted to do the job they're well trained to do, and you gain experience and you learn from your little mistakes. They have ownership of the whole thing, and they know that you have a certain standard. So they're going to bring their product back to you. You screen that product off because you're the one signing that file.
Exactly.
You're the one going, yep, no problem. You should go and apply for that search warrant. Yep, that's not a problem. I'm happy with your application. So you're the gatekeeper to the next level or to other specialized roles, but you have to let them do it. And I think the most difficult thing is you have to let them make mistakes.
Definitely, yeah.
They're going to learn from a mistake. You also have to make unpopular decisions. It might be that everyone wants to do a certain thing and the crew might have even spoken to each other. Different crews may have spoken, yep, we want to do this. You're the experienced one. You're the one with the leadership. You're the one who's ultimately accountable for your team. They may come to you with something that you go, no, we're not doing that, and we're not doing it for this reason. And they'll go, oh, come on, mate, like that's what we have to do. It's like, no, we're not doing that, and this is why.
Yep.
And that could be unpopular.
Yeah.
But guess what? That's why every 2 weeks you get paid more than them.
Exactly right. And it's also important, like, you've got to put that stopgap, and I've done it a couple of times before when I moved into that role, you know, where people want to come and they want, say, it could be a domestic. I remember one of my crews came to me one time, and they'll talk to me, they wanted this domestic violence order approved. I've gone, yeah, okay, there has been an incident there. And they've gone, because unfortunately there was this thing in the police about how you, to get rid of a job, sometimes the easiest way was to actually do a domestic violence order.
Mm.
You know, and whereas I sit there, I'm looking, because I used to work in domestic violence, and yeah. I've looked at it and I've gone, look, no, I don't think there's enough evidence. So what do you mean? I said, look, you can write this up to the correct way. Thing is, she is not a threat to this person for these reasons. And I said, that's how you write it up. I said, you do not have to hand out domestic violence orders like they're confetti.
Yeah.
And I said, you've got to be smarter in the way you actually write your jobs up to actually, you've got to explain the events, but you've got to also put it in a way that people can understand. You justify why you made those decisions.
So what you've done there is you've given me two examples of what I want to talk about next. The first one is, you're mentoring your junior crews based on your experience. That's why they come to you, because you're the one with the experience. You're the one who can say, no, it's not done for that reason, for this reason. And it can be that, look, just because it's easy to get a domestic violence order approved, you need to justify that. You need to know that. And that's mentoring. The next thing that you've also pointed out inadvertently is that systems have been put in place that have created an environment of fear amongst the lower troops, and as in the guys on the ground doing the work, where they feel they must do certain things. And that's an excellent thing that I want to move into, of poor leadership from a higher level.
Yeah.
I spent 2 years in Alice Springs, and basically 50-50 crime and general duties. And towards the end of my first stint in general duties, so the first year in, I was a shift sergeant acting on a number of... I was a senior constable, but I was acting shift sergeant. And I had this analogy that I sort of monitored, because I was fairly experienced by then. I was basically 9-10 years in the job by the time I got to Alice Springs. Alice Springs is an extremely busy... We all know it's made national headlines. We all know what it's like. The place is a war zone. It really is. I've never felt more overwhelmed. I've never felt the weight of the world on my shoulders like I did as a shift sergeant in Alice Springs on an evening shift. There is just so many reports of bad things coming in that I would need five times the troops just to get any level of response to what is coming over or just what's lining up on the screen. So straight away, I need to go, right, how are we going to do this? What are we going to do? Those constables on the ground have been in this environment on their probation. They've landed, it's the old thrown into the deep end of the pool.
Yeah.
Well, forget that. You're thrown in the deep end of the pool with concrete boots on when you land in Alice Springs, and you've still got to tread water. So these guys have learned how to survive. You go to a million's an exaggeration. You go to 15 domestics and a shift in there without exaggeration. That there are that many domestic violence incidents that come in. There is varying levels. This is a little controversial, but it needs to be explained. There are varying levels of domestic incidents. I won't say violence necessarily, because it's not always violent.
Hey, you're right.
A domestic relationship is very well defined. And unfortunately, all of this legislation is written in blood. The legislation and the policies and procedures adopted around domestics later on were that if there is any level of relationship being, it could be an in-law's brother who came to your house, that's a domestic relationship. Yeah. Those two people had a fist fight. So two able-bodied men had a fist fight on the front lawn, which would be nothing more than a social order matter. Mm. Because there is a domestic relationship involved, all of a sudden that becomes a domestic. That opens a whole world of response requirements that have to be monitored by the sergeant. There has to be complete checks done across both. The parties must be linked. There's all these extraneous requirements that took a lot of time.
Yeah.
Your radio's going, any available unit. There's pressure to get back to work, and you're tied up with a job that you know is not correct. What I found happened as a result of all this is those junior members, when I turned up, responded to everything in what I like to call third gear.
Yeah.
So sometimes a job required a first gear response. We turn up, two people have had an argument, they are in a domestic relationship, so therefore the matter is a family violence matter.
Yeah.
Violence is not the good term, because there was no violence, there was an argument. However, because of the policy at the time, that was what was required.
Yeah.
So it created this this response. What I found in that the junior guys realized, and it was, there was pressure on everybody, it was getting reviewed at so many levels, that people would not read into it very well. And if you didn't give at least, so it was almost like we talked about before, written out like confetti. Absolutely, they were written out like confetti. They were, domestic violence orders were handed out for reasons that were just ridiculous. And it was, it needed that little bit more analysis. Just, no, no, why? That's ridiculous. So we're going to send this person in there. I know that a lot of the people we're dealing with, it didn't matter if they could not get a government job, if they could not get a gun license, couldn't get a child, a working with children's check. They couldn't get all that. If you're the subject of a domestic violence order or a family violence order,
that's right,
or in other jurisdictions, apprehended violence order, your life is screwed. If you become, there is a hell of a consequence for being the subject of an AVO or DVO or an FVO. So straight away, I'm looking at the going, well, no, we need to justify this very punitive response, that we're, it's a civil response, it's not a criminal response, but it's a process that is very civil. I took it pretty personally, like, no, 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 let's justify, like you said earlier, let's justify it. Back to the old third gear response thing. I remember going to a matter, I was a senior member at this point. I went to a job with a guy who was a junior copper. He'd been in Alice for about a year. He was a couple of years older than me, and he was a very experienced, worldly guy with a lot of life experience. But he also knew how to play the game to get through a shift. We turn up to a stabbing in a community just outside of Alice. And as we walked up to the guy sitting in the chair, the victim was a male. The offender was his wife. He put his hand up and we said, what happened, mate? And he's put his hand up and excuse the language and he goes, that cunt over there and stabbed me. And he put his arm up. And as he did, a blood spurt came out from underneath his arm that was pure bright red, straight out of the lungs, frothy blood that's like, my God, this guy's going to die. There's blood. Went into the house and there's blood everywhere. So straight away we've gone and do, right, this guy's probably going to die. And he's already just pointed to the person who has done this. She's holding a knife, dropped the knife, grabbed that. So we've now got her with his blood. We've got a crime scene straight away. He's on the radio, very nonchalant because he's seen a lot of this. He's gone, can we get an ambulance to this location? We've got a person stab wound, blah, blah. Well, I've gone to go, no, negative, urgent. We've got blood coming from here. We've got a critical injury. We need urgent paramedic now. So I had to excite him a little bit. Like I said, mate, job is on. We're on. This is going to be a homicide if we can't save him now. So, and he sort of went, oh, no, you're right. And he stepped up. He was good. I'm not knocking the guy. But he was just, he was a third gear response. He was just responding in third gear. I think he was going to arrest her and we're going to take out an order and blah, blah, blah.
And we'll take nothing away from that, because when you go to, like you said, so many, you know, jobs a night.
15 a shift.
Exactly. Yeah. You're just sitting there rocking up and you're going, just the usual.
Yep.
Run through the mill.
Don't get me wrong. The first 500 excited him.
Yeah.
But he's up to his 50,000th.
Yeah.
And he's just not that excited anymore.
Yeah.
So, and it took that outside perspective to go, no, this is a homicide. And it also, I'd been through coronial matters and stuff by then. So I sort of understood consequence for inaction. And he wasn't being inactive. He was just not excitable and not able to see that there you need a range of responses. So it was difficult to write things off at a lower level that needed to be just dealt with at a lower level.
Yeah.
And it was difficult to get them to excite to the point where, oh my God, job's on. Like, this is a big job.
Yeah.
Anyway, that resolved well. He didn't pass away. He actually lived. I wouldn't have lived. You wouldn't have lived.
No.
But he lived.
Yeah.
Which was a miracle, because by the time he got to hospital, he had extremely low blood pressure. There was a ridiculous number of blood transfusions involved. Immediate surgery and then immediate evacuation to Royal Adelaide Hospital. So he was in, and when I say, I should probably tell you that Adelaide's in South Australia, not the Northern Territory. The escalation point within health in the Northern Territory is that if Royal Darwin Hospital can't handle it, we escalate to Adelaide. And that's what happened. They escalated straight from Alice Springs to Adelaide. So that's how serious he was. He did live. She was charged with serious harm, I believe, at the time. So, and she did some jail time for it. But it was that the requirement for leadership to go, no, 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 this it's that the checks and balances that come in. So my point of a lot of that is that poor leadership can be displayed at a higher level, in that policy can be enacted as a knee-jerk reaction to something in order to cover your ass.
Yeah.
Instead of just going, let's think about this, let's further educate our guys. The guys are so busy, it's difficult to educate them. This is why it's complex.
Yeah.
But it's you create a culture of fear in the troops down low that they must do at least this. I said, yep. No, not always. You have the appropriate response for the appropriate situation. And that wasn't there.
I think you pointed out one thing you spoke about earlier in this session is the fact that when you were like away taking a statement, that would have taken you away from being there to actually make sure the troops were doing, you know, or making sure that everything was happening as it should be. And that was a very important note.
Yep. How can I fly above the weeds when I'm trying to walk through them?
Exactly. Yep.
And I think that was the point with that earlier thing that I needed to, no, I know you guys are busy and the other troops will be available soon. They've got a job dealing with it at the moment, but their offender's really drunk and he's going to be in the cells. So then you guys, I need you to go over and help them take statements because that's critical.
Yeah.
And I then have to have the courage to up manage and go, I get a phone call from the watch commander, where are you guys? You're all locked down and there's jobs building up. I need someone to go to the other sector because I've got a serious job there, but they're all tied up. I need to have the courage to go, I'm sorry, there's no one available.
Yep.
And that's where, you know, we can find other alternatives, but at the end of the day, there's only so many resources.
Exactly.
And you've got to have the strength to say, what we're dealing with right now will be dealt with appropriately.
Yeah.
We're not just going to drop everything here and go and deal with the latest shiny object that's popped up on our screen.
Exactly. I think we've spoken about this before. It's about being a buffer.
Yeah.
As well. So, like, in the rank structure, you have to look after the guys underneath you, but you also have to understand and manage the people above you, so to speak. So you've got to make sure that these guys can do their job without getting hassled by up there.
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's another thing that... And it's going to be... There's a few recurring themes coming up, I'm noticing.
There is.
The biggest and my favourite one is humour, and we'll always go back to that. It's always humour.
Yeah.
Leadership will be an ongoing thing that we talk about.
Yeah.
We're sort of talking about the expansion of your experience as you get through the role, as your years of service carry on. It's amazing. You don't know what you know.
Yeah.
You don't realise how much your knowledge you accumulate. And I think we'll always have something to talk about because the knowledge grows.
Well, it's funny, like what you said there, like everything, you know, you did a lot of the talking there and there was a couple of points there going, oh, geez, I've got something to talk about there. I've got something to talk about there. You know, whether it's relevant to this or not, it's a different matter. But yeah, it's amazing when you start talking about how much information there actually is.
Mm.
And you said that earlier, like there's a lot to try and, when you're trying to teach a crew on the ground, there is so much information to get to them, but you can't overload them at once.
No, it's a trickle feed.
It is.
You can't drink from a fire hydrant.
No, no, that's right.
And that's that. The information's more than fire hydrant.
Yeah.
And it just takes that experience. But yeah, I think, I don't know, I'm happy with that.
I think so. The thing is, we could talk about this all day. We'll move on to something else, but we will talk about leadership definitely down there. I think we actually have to talk about domestic violence as well, because that's another whole separate field.
Very topical field, and it's something that coppers hate.
Yeah.
And the dangerous part about it is, and I think we'll probably flow into that next, domestic violence is... People in society think domestic violence incidents happen once in a blue moon and they're really bad, and when the matter goes to a coronial, well, hang on, the police have been to this 1,000 times before. How do they not see that in 5 weeks he's going to kill her?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about you, but my crystal ball's crap.
That's right, yeah.
So the trouble is when you go to 1,000 jobs of these, thousands of jobs, thousands of domestics, everything from a very sore little verbal argument that someone's called in to weaponize the police against the other person, right through to a horrific murder.
Mm.
It's all on the spectrum of domestic violence.
Yeah.
But it's hardly the same thing.
Yeah.
So I think that's a nice segue into the next one.
Definitely.
But we'll wrap it up, Shilty. What do you reckon?
Mate, we've spoken about leadership here, and I think we'll just get ready for the next one.
Happy days, mate. Talk soon.
See ya.